Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Good morning. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. Every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time, you can tune into American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. Every week as well, UR Tennis features great shows with Lisa Stone, Parenting Aces, on Monday at noon, and in Jason Haynes's American College Tennis program that is featured at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 1 o'clock in the Central Time. The UR Tennis Network can be reached by calling in 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. And that's the number you would call also if you want to be a guest on today's show, if you just want to call in and add some comments, or just to listen to the show live. You can also listen to it on your iPhone with the podcast on your iTunes app. UR Tennis Network, that's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S Network. Each and every show over the past 3 years, you can listen to, and there's just some great tennis people out there. I want to credit Jason Haynes for all that he has done to get this network and off of the ground, and there are some other tennis networks that are coming along as well. His innovation has created a ripple effect, and we really are getting out the information that we need to in the tennis world. Now, the American Tennis Program, I am Chuck Creasy. My website is chuckcreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E. Go to my website and you can get my camps, my books, my audios, my videos, and those things if you would be interested in that. Also, I always write on the blog. And I've also, each and every week's show for the past 2 years are up on in chuckcreasy.net. We always ask you to stand up and to speak out. The key in American tennis is that we must get on the table those issues that are just not cliches and facts. We need to go a little bit deeper with opinions, feelings, and needs and get things on the table. We are in a bit of a, I don't want to call it a crisis, but we are in dire straits. We are in slim times. We're a little bit on the desert with tennis, even though the potential is out there. We see our college ranks drying up with a lot of problems. Only three. Well, now listen, I always would say one player now in the top 100, John Isner, but we now have three players in the top 100 from the college ranks. But compared to 39 in 1984, 39 players on the men's side. And now on the women's side, it's been 20 years since Lisa Raymond has come through the college ranks. We have the problems with numbers in junior tennis. As junior high school tennis, we have 350,000 participants doing participation activities with tennis, but actually that only translates to 26,000 active competitive players in our high school and junior ranks. So that's not a good margin of 7%, so it's a bit disappointing. You know, as we go into the professional ranks, of course, we saw 75 tournaments in the mid-80s that were USA Tour events, and now we're down to 14, I think 13 maybe, and this is quite disappointing as well. So as tennis is the number two sport in the world in popularity, number two in Europe for sure, as soccer is number one, it ranks something like 21 in USA. And so, you know, folks, as I talk about this, I don't want to just be an alarmist, but we've got some issues that we have to get going a little bit better. And I've got a great guest today. When he comes on the line, he is a man that knows a lot about Small Town Tennis USA. And I'm going to talk about Small Town Tennis USA in a minute. I wanted to remind you of Edmund Burke's quote that as we want you to stand up and to speak out, we remind you to stay professional, address issues, not top, just issues, not people, and nobody can find fault. Edmund Burke stated that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men or good people to do nothing. We need to stand up and we need to speak out. And let's do it in the right way, address issues, take care of that circle of influence that is that one person in front of you. Your circle of concern is very, very big, but that one person in front of you makes all the difference in the world. And I've got a great story to tell you here in a few minutes. But I want to talk about, before our guest comes on the line, we have a man I think that has covered many, many miles of tennis during his lifetime as a college coach, as a high school coach, as a club professional, as a community professional, and then as a leader in the sport of tennis. And everybody that this man comes in contact with is influenced by him and his enthusiasm and love for the sport. His name is Mark Hancock, and we're going to be talking about Small Town Tennis USA when he comes onto the show here. And I'm going to give a little bit of a background about Small Town Tennis USA here and what it is about as we get started. It's been 6 years ago I met Dan Vonk. Dan Vonk is a man down in South Georgia. I've had him on the show several times. It's 2007. Dan was National High School Coach of the Year. I was at the PTR convention, and he had a very, very interesting story that he told. And then the work he was doing in South Georgia in a small county, Kingsland, Georgia, Camden County, Georgia. And I said, I got to meet this man. And I went and met him, and we became friends. Working together in the summers and all those things. But Dan's got a problem like a lot of people have in small town tennis, USA. Dan comes from a small area, and it just does not breed those things that really set up a tennis environment. Football is king in Georgia. Baseball is big, but for the most part, he has 20 or 30 kids just on fire for tennis. And, of course, one person with enthusiasm is worth multitudes. So Dan was going to, you know, start some tennis programs, and it's basically through his enthusiasm and that he has affected six or seven counties all around him. Now, the problem is that everybody has known of a Dan Vonk type person, and you can't really put a finger on what makes a person like this tick or why they are just on fire for tennis. But their enthusiasm breeds more enthusiasm. It is a contagious thing, and pretty soon you have people giving and giving and giving to others instead of taking and taking and taking from the sport. They use tennis as a vehicle to give instead of to take. And what I mean by taking is worrying about our rankings, worrying about whether we're going to get a scholarship, worrying about if we're going to get a fair shake. The whole difference is being a go-giver instead of a go-getter if you want to be successful. So Dan has six or seven counties down in South Georgia very excited about tennis. And what has happened is those counties and their coaches now are excited. So he's got a multitude of good tennis things going on. Now, I don't want to get too much in depth, but until recently, when they started the point system, the top-down management that we do with the USTA, which I think is a crippler of our system and of our kids, when they started this, a lot of the top tournaments that they had created were moved, and Dan now says he has to go some five-hour drive to get his kids up to Atlanta to play a big tournament in the state of Georgia. Now, they do have Jacksonville close. They can go to Jacksonville. You get some tournaments in Florida, but they're from Georgia, so the kids really are not getting the incentives that they need as far as competition, but Dan does have it going. So what we were able to do, I talked to Dan, we've been talking over the years, but about a year ago we started thinking about a chance of putting something together called Small Town Tennis USA. And this is a thing that we have come up with. We're calling it Small Town Tennis USA. And what it is there's two voids. And the first void or let's call it a sleeping giant instead of a void. Let's look at the opportunistic way of looking at this. The sleeping giant in tennis is rural, not urban tennis. Rural tennis is where 72%, the same environment that 72% of all of our professional athletes come out of. In the rural communities, sports are big. There are not a lot of circuses in town. There are not a lot of sideshows. There are not a lot of distractions. So kids get hooked on tennis. 72% of our athletes come out of rural communities. 350,000 kids are playing high school tennis. Only 26,000 are playing competitive tennis. Again, these are our sleeping giants. So when I talked with Dan about Small Town Tennis USA, he jumped right on it, and he said, look, do you think that we could get some of the college kids in the summer to come and work in our smaller communities? I said, Dan, look, you don't realize what you've just said. We also have a great void in coaching apprentices or coaching apprenticeships. Most of the time in tennis, people play tennis for a while. They either graduate from college or they come off the tour. They say, let's make some quick money at a country club teaching tennis. And they might not know anything about coaching or teaching or motivating youngsters, but they get a ball and some balls and they pump balls and they make a quick money and they may or may not fall in love with it. Many, many do. But the point is that we have a void in the mentorship of coaches. Not just tennis teachers, but tennis coaches. I said, wouldn't it be great if we got some players, the guys who are down the line on some of these college teams, and we put them in an environment of leadership and said, look, this county is your county this summer. High school and community centers come together. Here's your tennis guy. Here's the guy that's got some tennis background and some tennis knowledge. And then cut him loose, the free enterprise system, on the ground, in the trenches, motivating kids, being a Pied Piper for the game of tennis. See what you can get done. So here's what Dan and I did. Dan and I drove down to see Dan Santorum at the PTR about 6 weeks ago and asked Dan Santorum, actually maybe 2 months, it was in January, 2 months ago, and asked Dan Santorum, listen, would you have some interest? And he said, let's do a pilot program. So what we're going to do is we're going to get four college guys in a pilot program, two for the state of Georgia, two for the state of South Carolina, and we're going to put these college guys who are not going to play professional tennis, but they're in love with tennis, and they would be great teachers and motivators. We're going to cut them loose. We're going to give them a certification in the Total Tennis Training coaching certification program that I do with coaches, and also a PTR coaching certification that is perfectly legal with NCAA rules, and we're going to have them work a salaried job in these communities and get kids on fire for tennis. So this is going to be called Small Town Tennis USA. We're going to do four counties or four places this summer. We've already got three of them in South Carolina and Georgia. And hopefully, if this goes well, it'll be a pilot program. Next year, it might be 8 or 16 or 32, and who knows what we can do. And we're going to solve the problems working backward. We know we need to get kids on fire in small communities. We're not going to wait on other people to do this. We're going to dive in and get this done and take care of that circle of influence, that one person in front of us, and see what we can make happen. So Small Town Tennis USA, keep your eyes on it, folks. This is what's coming down the pike. I'd like to introduce our guest to the show today. Mark Hancock has come on the line, and as I already gave you his accolades, Mark, you're the perfect person to have on the show because you came up in Small Town Tennis USA, and you have been a high school coach, a college coach, a professional. You know the difference between being a coach, a professional teacher, and working with kids, and you inspire youngsters, you inspire people around you. And since I first have met Mark, I have never seen a person that is pretty much unselfish to a fault, where he will give you the shirt off his back if you give him an opportunity. So, Mark, thanks for being on the show today.
Well, Chuck, thanks for those kind words, and I sure hope my wife is listening to that. So,
well, we're going to talk about her as well, because your better half really does you a lot of great service. But, Mark, we're talking about Small Town Tennis USA, and you grew up pretty much. You've told me about your upbringing. Mark, you never had a lesson. I want you to tell people the story a little bit about how you got into tennis, a little bit about your upbringing, and don't make me start crying now like you did last time when you told this story, but it is a good one. It is a good one. So could you tell us about yourself a little bit?
Well, I come from a small town in Virginia in the mountains, and it was very rural. You either played football, baseball, or basketball. And for my family, you might wrestle. So I wrestled to please my family. I played football to fit in with the kids at school. But I played tennis because I had three friends about 2 miles down the road. And they were all brothers. They were all older than me. And I told them I would play tennis with them if they didn't tell anybody. So we went and played, and I played with them for 2 years, and I fell in love with the sport. Now, being rural tennis, the courts weren't two or three blocks down the road. I had to work to get to the courts. Now, I would get up at 7, and I would ride my bicycle or walk to the courts, and they were about 6 to 7 miles away. And I would just sit and wait and wait, and somebody would come. Well, eventually, after 2 years of playing these brothers, when we would go out, I never won a set. Not one set in 2 years. And it dawned on me, what in the world am I playing for? It's because I love the sport. And what it did was it got me out of an environment that could have been better. But the tennis court was my sanctuary. I could control the element inside the fence. And that's what drew me to it. And the more I did it, the more I could control what the ball did, what my opponent did. And I fell in love with the sport. And the first time that I played a high school match was against my best friend who had took me to these matches to play with him for 2 years. And I was playing for my team then. And I made a decision at that point that I was going to win. And I never lost to him again. And at the district championships, I beat him 6-4. And he said, I wish I could say that I hated that I taught you to play, but now I can say I taught the district champ tennis.
Well,
so
the interesting
it was a
thing,
moment that I'll never forget. Yeah,
thing you're saying, Mark, is that you basically, those the 2 years you played and didn't win, and I had a similar situation. So about the kids having to just play for without competition, and if you lose, it bothers, you know, it's a bad thing. We don't agree with that. But have you ever thought about, I'm sure you've considered what your life would have been without tennis and coming along.
Oh, it saved my life, yeah. Yeah, I've get told the story a few times. It saved my life. It gave me direction. It helped me focus on something that what I didn't know at the time was indirectly building my character in a positive way instead of me sitting playing video games or whatever thinking how terrible I had it. You know, oh, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. Well, I got out there and realized, you know, you make your fairness. You know, if it's not fair, get them to do something about it. You know, if I'm getting beat, I could quit. And so you learn these things at this age, so it's life lessons that we forget to learn or teach these kids on the court. And coming from a rural area, by all accounts, I should be working in a furniture factory, not that there's anything wrong with that, but the thought of it at the time when I graduated made me nauseous. I just the next 30 years in one room doing the same thing. And I don't know if I would have made it. I really don't know where I would be if not for tennis. I got a scholarship to a school here in South Carolina, played tennis, got an education, became a school teacher. Now I'm a tennis professional at a club here in Lexington. And it saved my life. It honestly did.
So you were a school teacher. Go ahead.
No. And as a coach, I think we missed the boat on helping these kids, especially in rural areas, who don't have the opportunity to say, hey, you know, let's play some tennis. You have the facilities. The issue I had, Chuck, in the rural area was there were courts that were always open. That was the good thing. The bad thing was it was kind of hard to get to them sometimes, you know, because they weren't on every block. So what I found the most valuable thing to me, and it's kind of an outdated, old-fashioned statement here, is every rural court, in my opinion, should have a wall, because that was my opponent for many, many, many hours. Without that wall, I could not have been learning or hitting a tennis ball. And to me, the rural areas, sometimes they have grass growing on the court. That can be solved. But not having someone to hit with sometimes is a bigger problem. So putting up a wall here on every court, to me, that is one of the biggest things you can do. Marketing in a rural area, it wasn't marketed where I was from. So tennis was like, oh, you play tennis? You know, it shouldn't be that way. We kind of have to unseed Coca-Cola here, you know. Maybe not unseed them as far as a marketing standpoint, but the big three, football, baseball, basketball. Okay, we have to sort of somehow get our share of that pie and market tennis in these rural areas to say, hey, you know, you have facilities, athletes do this, just make sure they understand they have an opportunity to get out and play. It's a lifelong sport.
Mark, let me jump in this the second here. You know, tennis has that image problem for kids starting out. We had a former excellent player on, came from small town Louisiana, and he was talking about how people would ride by in a pickup truck and yell at him and everything like that. And, you know, you big sissy playing tennis, you know, this is not a – and I had to hide my racket. I was on a basketball team and things when I was in high school, but I had to hide my racket. Kid, people would call you sissies back then things to play sport. It got to be a cool sport in the late 70s and 80s, but really, you know, it was one of those sports – that the more you do it and dive into it, the deeper it gets, and it is an addiction for life. It just is it just opens exponentially for you. You don't see it, but what we're not doing, Mark, let me say this. Years ago, I was able to sit on a board in the 80s, early 80s with, I mean, it was unbelievable, but I was at a meeting, and I got to sit on a board with Arthur Ashe was on it. And, of course, one of my idols growing up, he and the Stan Smiths and the Rod Lavers and the people were just such gentlemen and just so classy. But he was asked this question. He was asked, where are we missing the boat with tennis players? And this relates to what you're saying. He says, it's level two. We get kids involved in tennis, but they don't become tennis players. They sort of do it and then drop it. And that you are a high school coach. Do you see this with your high school kids? I'd like for you to maybe go there and tell us why high school kids play tennis, but they do not become tennis players.
Well, what they're seeing from the top level is the decisions being made for them. Literally here in the county that I work in, some of the tennis coaches are hired because they have a CDL license. They can drive the bus. So what you have are these tennis players, they're putting in long, hot hours in the summer, going out when it's cold, they're training, they're doing, and then they get put in charge of by someone who doesn't really know much
about Mark, tennis. Let me stop you there. Wait a minute. Let me stop you there. There's nothing to do about that because that would be like if I'm a high school math teacher. Were you a math teacher? What kind of teacher were you?
I was an elementary school teacher, believe it or not.
Okay, all right. So you're teaching elementary school, and you know how it goes in the public school system. If I was a high school math teacher like I started out to be, they might have asked me to be the soccer coach or an assistant soccer. And I wouldn't know anything other than just getting a book and trying to read about it. But it's even worse than that. If they'd asked me to be the golf coach, you know, you would try, but, you know, I might have the kids holding the golf club upside down or something like that.
Right.
And it's just the way that it is. So if I'm that coach, Mark, I'm saying, I try my best and read some books, or I bail out and I don't try. But in the meantime, parents are complaining.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Well, what do we do?
It doesn't have to be that way.
What do we do?
Well, you train them. You wouldn't ask the soccer coach to teach biology.
Okay.
Right, without proper training. The districts of these schools send teachers for professional enrichment courses. They spend hundreds and thousands of dollars to get trained or certified in computer literacy.
Okay.
So,
all right, thanks.
But they don't do that with their coaches.
Well, thanks. Wait a minute, Mark.
Tier, quote, unquote, quote.
I'm going to jump in. You know me well enough. We'll get this heated up here in a minute. But, Mark, thanks for doing a commercial for my Total Tennis Training Certification Program that we can do. You attended one of them, and we had 25 high school coaches there coming in South Georgia. By the way, Dan Vonk put that on. But here's my point. Look, they only pay you maybe $200, $300 for the season. By the way, we're going to give you, you're going to take the tennis team, and we're going to give you a stipend of $500 for, whoa, gee whiz, thanks, man. Is that worth, what do I get, a quarter an hour now? So these school systems, it's a shame, but
you know, tennis is a big participant sport. But I want to go further. We all know this. I'm hoping that Small Town Tennis USA will help. But, Mark, what happens here with the kids? Okay, do they just say, okay, tennis isn't that important to me? Or, wait a minute, you know, well, why do they just they pick it up and put it down so easy?
Well, accessibility, the importance put on it themselves. Listen, tennis isn't an easy sport. And right now they're taught if it's not easy, it's okay to be a hard trier.
Yep.
You've said that. And it comes down to
Wait a minute, I didn't say it
was
okay to be a hard trier. I said that's what we're saying.
That's what we're saying.
Okay. Need to get that right. Go.
We've talked about it. Someone needs to be in front of them, explaining to them, and saying, okay, champions decide to win, losers decide to try. Either you do or you don't. There's no in-between. And some of these kids will do it. The point system is really hindering, in my opinion, the junior players in several ways. I think it has value to a certain point, but the point system in many ways is changing the reason the kids are playing. They can't get into tournaments. USTA, you can't play on junior teams in the off season. You are placed on a team instead of playing. Chuck, if someone would have told me it, you can't play with the three brothers that you played with for 2 years, right? If they said, now we want you on a team, but they're on this team, but you have to be on another team, I would have never played again. Just made no sense. The kids, some of them understand, and I hate to say it this way, but some of them don't understand what they need and want. You know, you have to kind of nudge them in that direction. And they're not getting any healthy, well, I shouldn't say any, they're not getting enough knowledge imparted on them from people who know marketing. It's not cool to play tennis sometimes. Well, I've played, and the season's over, but I don't play right now, you know, that kind of thing. The labeling of tennis players, it's like, oh, you don't, well, tennis, you know what? You have to be a serious athlete anymore to compete in tennis. It's not, and it's a lot of work. And that's the biggest reason these kids aren't doing it right after the season. They'll pick it up 2 weeks before the season and drop it again. You know, it's momentum. Once they have the momentum of during the season, someone comes in and says, look, you know, we're going to continue this through the summer and then through the fall, and then by the time the season hits again, man, you're going to be off and running. You're going to, you know, you're not going to start at the starting line. You're going to be half a lap ahead. And the excitement, someone has to be there to create that.
Mark, so much of what you're saying, it just hits a nerve. We could not be more stupid about the way that we are trying to do these things. Okay, high school tennis, first of all, dual match tennis versus tournament tennis. High school tennis, dual matches do not inspire. They are nice to be on a team, but it does not inspire incentive to improve. Because once you're locked into a pigeonhole, you're locked into a pigeonhole of number four, number three, or number two doubles or something like this. Dual match tennis does not foster growth. It's nice for kumbaya, let's get together, let's have a nice outing, we're on a team. It's a fun thing, but it does not inspire growth. The other thing that you said about the point system, and I talk about it just about every week now, and I'm doing whatever I can to speak out against the point system, is that it does not spur rivalries. It is about chasing points. So as adults, what we have done with the point system is we said, go to these tournaments and get some points. Oh, well, gee whiz, do I get green stamps with that too? Okay, can I get some coupons with my points? This isn't the way kids think.
I have one family recently drive all the way to Tennessee to play a tournament. So this kid could get points knowing that he was going to lose in the first round. They drove all the way to Tennessee, lost in the first round, and drove back 4 points. And I said, so how much does each point your son gets, how much does that equate in dollar bills? Because that's pretty much what you're doing. You're paying for points. I said, I'm going to hold a tournament, and I'll just say, okay, the first round costs you 100, you get, say, 100 points, 120 points, that'll be $75. Because that's basically what's happening. There's no rivalry. There's no looking across the net and saying, yep, you got me last time. It's going to be different this time. It doesn't foster fight. You know, it doesn't foster, you know, the rivalries are healthy. The rivalries are good. Our generation's a little soft. That's what we're doing, Mark.
Mark, it's what we're doing with the participation trophies, and every kid is a great kid, and we're not going to keep score. But you said best rivalries, not wanting to lose to somebody, is the greatest motivator for a child. Number two, titles. They want titles. They don't want a point. Like I ask kids all the time, would you rather be number one in the country or win Kalamazoo? What do you think they say? Right. Win Kalamazoo. Do you think any pro player would like to be number one in the world or win Wimbledon? What do you think?
Right.
Win Wimbledon. Would they like to be number one in South Carolina or to win Belton? Win Belton. Now, the shame about I told a group of coaches earlier, this point system, let's look at this. Belton has been the gold standard for all kids in the state of South Carolina for years. And it's done on a small court, city court complex, and in people's backyards. It's a brilliant, wonderful thing. One, it's the community. But can you imagine if the USTA, and pardon me, USTA, maybe you should hear this, but this is what we're doing. It's wrong. That they come in and say, oh, by the way, Belton can't manage this anymore. Let's send it over to this new complex in Florence or in Sumter or in Columbia or Rock Hill. You're going to run the state close. And wait a minute, you're not winning Belton now. No, guys, you're chasing points. This is ludicrous.
Right.
If you understand motivation of children, this is ludicrous. Let me say this to be fair for those people on the computers. It's easy for you guys to add it up. It's easy for you guys to say, hey, we got a smooth system. Here are these points. These are one stars. These are four stars. These are L3s, L2s, L1s. Kids don't care about winning an L1, L2, L3. You know?
On the South Carolina website, there is a page that USTA has under the juniors that is a point calculator for each round. How many kids do you think actually look at that? Or the parents? It's the parents. They're the one doing the math. The kids are saying, what tournament am I playing? They don't ask how many points is it worth. You know, and the point system also here, locally, we have a few level twos, level threes, and there are several kids who they don't play tournaments every weekend. They can't afford it. But they can't get into these level two local tournaments, the ones that they don't have to spend $500-$600 on an out-of-town trip to play in because they don't have the points. So, again, you have to pay for your points in order to get into the tournament, and it's a disservice to the players who are working as hard as they can. For whatever reason, they don't have the money to go to Charleston or Rock Hill or wherever, you know, every weekend to get enough points to get in these.
Well, Mark, it's as you know too, the best player in the state might be a poor kid who can only go to four tournaments a year, and he might win all four tournaments and be ranked 18 in the state. And that's why the rankings don't hold water, and the kids don't even know. As a coach, you don't even know if a number one ranking is really a number one ranking or number 30 ranking is really a number 30 ranking. We got to change that. That's not smart. Mark, I got to go to commercial. Hang on.
Okay.
This is Mark Hancock, guys. Call in today, area code 714-583-6853 to talk to Mark. We'll be right back. Chuck Creasy in American Tennis. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy announcing 2014 Total Tennis Training Camps in five locations this summer. In Charleston, in Lexington, South Carolina, in Landrum, South Carolina, in Sumter, South Carolina, and in Atlanta and Marietta, Georgia. Go to chuckcreasy.net, that's K-R-I-E-S-E.net, and click on the camp icon. Or you can go to totaltennistraining.com. We're in our 38th summer. With Total Tennis Training Camp, it's much more than just hitting a forehand and hitting a backhand. We teach about the physical part of the game, the mental part of the game, and the emotional part of the game. You'll also learn about the power of momentum. Since 1979, I've been working on eight simple rules that will help you or your child to learn the power of momentum and how to manage it on the tennis court. It's talked about every week on every sporting show, but nobody really knows how to manage it. You will if you come to 2014 Total Tennis Training Camps. I'll see you on court. Coach Chuck Creasy with American Tennis every Wednesday at noon. Today our guest is Mark Hancock, and Mark is a high school teacher, high school coach, college coach, club pro, community service person who gives much of your life to Small Town Tennis USA. Mark, it's a much bigger issue than just tennis. When we go to these meetings and I bring this stuff up, there is a big pushback, like, why should we go back to the 80s? Why should we go back to this? We've got this
system. If I remember correctly, we were pretty good in the 80s, right?
We sure were. We was 39 in the top 100. We were pretty good.
That's right.
But the pushback comes from a philosophy or a belief, and I don't want to call it socialism. We were talking yesterday, by the way, J.P. Weber, we coach tennis every Tuesday at noon on Yellow Ball Network. Actually, he started his own program there. It's pretty cool. But, you know, he had Bill Wright on there, and he was talking a lot about the secular humanism movement, where everything's sort of okay, everybody feels good, and it's basically socialism. And Mark,
right.
I'd get up in arms. We were at a talk, and people said, "Yeah, but Coach Creasy, in France, they do this and this and this and this." And I said, "But France is a socialist country. This is the United States of America. This is American tennis. We are not France." Mark.
Right.
Do you see this happening?
Chuck, you know, I think it's a whole, even goes even further. It's what is wrong, and I know I may not be politically correct, what is wrong with
don't
thinking
you dare.
That
by the
you
way,
might
don't
be
you
something,
dare.
What's wrong with thinking you might be a little special in something? What's wrong with being a little exceptional? What's wrong with thinking I come from the greatest country in the world? It comes from a great history. Why can't I be proud of who I am where I come from? Why can't I be great at tennis? Why, you know, I'm not out to hurt anyone's feelings, but I'm out to honor them by giving them the best game I have. And if that means beating them 6-0, 6-0, I honor them by not letting up because of the respect that they could come back and beat me. That's getting lost. There's no reason kids need to be great anymore because it's okay to try. No, it's not okay to try. We must succeed, and we don't stop until we do.
We must compete.
Sorry.
We tell kids, compete,
exactly.
Succeed, compete. And
right.
But Mark, you probably,
I was
11 years old when John F. Kennedy, and I never will forget, he said, by the end of this, Alan Shepard had just gone up in the rocket ship. And he said, by the end of this decade, we will land a man on the moon.
Exactly.
And we will bring him back safely.
Try.
He didn't say we're going to try. He said, we will do this
right.
In 8 years. And we go, okay, I guess we will, because President Kennedy said we can do this. We will do this. And it's like we're a little bit too smart now. I mean, now it's like
mm-hmm.
you can't do this without 40 people helping you. And by the way, you're a victim. And by the way, you got bullied. And by the way, you don't have the
right.
good enough racket. And by the way, you have grass in your courts. And by the way, you know, the beautiful thing is to learn that it's not what happens to you. It's more important what happens in you.
Right.
And Mark, Dak Nabbit, go ahead. But
it's so easy to fail. Failing is easy because there's always 10 people to say, oh, it's okay. It's not okay to stop fighting. I tell my kids when they come off the court, every time they give me one excuse for what happened, I say, I want two reasons that you should have done it differently. So they learn real quick to stop with the excuses, and all of a sudden they start, well, did you do that? No. Well, you just told me how to fix it, and you didn't do it. They were so focused on the negative and how easy it is just to have an excuse and not try and be done with it than to stay on the court and compete. Figure it out. They have an obligation to themselves and to their teammates to find a way and fight until the last point. They don't do that.
We want to talk about your wife here a second because she's pretty, amazing person. She works with a lot of inner city kids, and she does a lot of work. Kids who have who've really come up tough and then have some tough endings. And, this is a problem we have, this whole generation of youngsters coming up believing that I heard a preacher one time say, you've got to name it, claim it, tame it, don't name it, claim it, blame it. And,
right.
That was pretty impacting. But can you say a word or two there about your better half there, about working with the kids and how frustrating it probably is without giving too much information?
Well, she works with victims of all types of violence, neglect, sometimes torture, and she's stronger than I am because I don't think I could do it without it affecting my whole outlook on life. She works with the victims that have been sexually mistreated, neglect from starvation to the point of eating their own fingernails for food at the age of 6. It's tough. Life is tough. You know, it is. You have the hand that's dealt you. You can fold or you can keep trying. And you can't take it back. It causes problems, but you have to deal with it. You have to deal with it. You have to figure out, number one, what the problem is. You have to label it. And then after you label it, the next step is, do I like it? The answer is no. What can I do about it? You search for answers. It's the process of being successful in life. And teaching kids the process, even in the middle of chaos, gives them something to hold on to when there's nothing else in their lives other than themselves. They have to learn to depend on themselves to get themselves, pull themselves up, make something of themselves. You know, I look at them not as even unsuccessful. There's just lesser degrees of successful from where they come from is amazing sometimes.
Well, the sad thing is that we are participating in the dumb down of our children.
Absolutely.
And with it's not just the cell phones. It's not just, but it's like, it's not systems, folks. It is not a good system. It's incentives. And it is teaching our youngsters that the process of winning or losing has nothing to do with a win or a loss.
Or
but
a loss.
It has everything to do with giving your heart and your soul to try to win.
Right.
And this is
passion.
Where we goof up. So, sorry, Mark?
It has to matter.
Yes, it has to matter. The kids, look, easy to pick up is easy to put down, hard to pick up and hard to put down. I've often said that we treat tennis, it's like we're teaching kids bowling. You know, everybody's been bowling. Very few people are bowlers. And I very apologize to any great bowlers out there. You know how hard it is, the difference between bowling a 170 and a 230 or a 280 is tremendous amount of hours of work. But we don't get the kids past bowling the 150s, you know, that where
right.
you just can be an occasional bowler. You go bowling, but you're never a bowler. So we have kids
right.
play tennis, but they never become tennis players. We have them go to school in the 10th school, but they never become students.
Right.
And it's because of a lack of passion. So where's
passion.
The dumb down? What can we do about the dumb down, Mark, that we're doing?
Well, again, it starts with to me it started – In the mid-80s, because I could sort of see it when I was in high school. Didn't want to hurt somebody's feelings. Oh, be more mindful. You know, you can be a fierce competitor and not hurt somebody's feelings. I think Nadal is a great example of that. He's as fierce as they get, and he wants to win, you know, but if his opponent goes down or for whatever reason, he'll run to the net and make sure he's okay because he loves the competition. If you love winning enough, you will learn that you can't focus on winning. You focus on the process of winning. Afterwards, you can start thinking about the winning and the losing and all that.
Yeah.
Kids today, they don't do that. They say, it's okay. You know, it's all right. We have to make them tougher individuals and make them care about something more than they do. It's okay to not be a winner in this society today. And I can't disagree more with that.
It's appalling. Listen, last week I showed my team you're always trying to talk about competing and what competition is. Do this, folks. Go to YouTube and look up Mickey Ward, middleweight boxer, Mickey Ward versus Emmanuel Berton, ninth round, or it's 4 out of 4, I think, in the YouTube thing. So I pull this up, and these guys, and I do it a lot to show what tennis is, the body punches it takes, and you don't know what punch it is, that what body punch makes a guy bend over. But there's one punch he lays, and where the guy goes down, the guy gets up, and they fight against each other more and more and more and more, and they just pummeling each other in the end. But here's the point. These middleweight guys go at each other. It's the purest of pure competition to see these guys boxing. All right, they both can barely stand up. At the end, they announced the winner, which was Mickey Ward. These guys hug each other, embrace each other, hug each other like they're best friends. And you got one winner, one loser, but they both had such respect for each other. Now, I compare
right.
that to a guy who halfway tried in a match that I watched recently, halfway tried, and then as his opponent shook hands, the opponent sort of laughed at him afterwards, and the guy ended up calling him sort of a name, you know, because the guy was a jerk, walked off the court. Both kids ended up like, this is tennis? I go, this is tennis? What are you doing?
Right.
Look at this is what it is.
You give everything and you honor the man who tries to beat you to a pulp, and you
Absolutely.
Try to beat the other person with your heart and your soul, and afterwards you embrace each other because of the battle that you've had, and what sissies we have become in our society that we do not embrace competition, and we
and
don't understand the essence of competition.
The essence of competition is I'm giving everything I have. Even if I don't know I have anything left, I'm giving it. You know, that's, you know, when you have someone who believes for no reason at all that he should win, when he's getting pummeled, that's when miracles happen. He keeps fighting. You can't win if you don't fight, mentally, physically, and emotionally. And that's why you play the game.
Mark, you know, and I love what you're saying. We're going to try to get to Small Town Tennis USA, and where I think you'll find some great competitors, not about style, but about heart and core in these smaller communities. But I got to tell you a story. And folks, this is – and then we're going to – we only got a few minutes here. I'll let Mark have the last word here. But recently somebody said about – you know, you're always concerned about – your circle of concern is so big, the world, and we're turning socialistic, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. Better about circle of influence. And who is the circle of influence, folks? It's the one person in front of you. So here's the story. I just heard this story. It's a story of Mordecai Jones, I think it is the last name. And so Mordecai was a circuit rider, preacher, that would go from town to town, small communities, and he would get people to accept Christ and to come to the Lord and to know that there is a Savior out there for them. And what he would do was he'd go and preach his little bitty things and one or another. And so he was about ready to give up. And of course, the story goes that one night right before he was done, he only had like 15 people in his sermon, and only one person came up and accepted Christ that night and turned his life over, you know, to the Lord and gave up his worldly ways. And he told his wife, "I surely must be a failure what I'm doing." That one person, Mark, and to you people out there listening, happened to be Billy Graham. And that being said, that circle of influence that you have is that one person in front of you. Because the law of reciprocity, you will never know how it grows and grows and grows. And, Mark, we only got about a minute. Let's give you the last word there. I just appreciate having you on so much today.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I just think that the point system, getting back to that really quickly, the biggest issue I have with it is they're chasing points so much because it's so hard to get a tennis scholarship. Most tennis team colleges only give 2.5 to 3.5 scholarships, and we're competing with 21-year-old European pros for these scholarships. So they're doing everything they can to try to make their resume look better to these colleges. That's a whole different show, I'm sure. But the grassroots project you're doing is—it's essential. It's has the most potential to breed better tennis players in America than anything else, because that's where they are. We have to do a better job marketing tennis to those areas, provide maybe complete starter kits to players. Balls, racket, you know, and just let them go at it. Provide professional assistance in these areas,
as we can.
You mentioned.
Yeah.
They're thirsty for
it. Kids down, and not dumb them down, Mark.
No, hold them to a standard and accept nothing less. Make them work up. You know, tennis is about degrees of emotional depth you can achieve. It's a lot like a philosophy, the martial arts. You know, there are different degrees of tennis. Listen, I've lost a lot of warm-ups in my life, Chuck.
Yep.
Because the guys were great hitters. But there's a depth to playing that these
yep.
kids, but it's a depth to themselves that they're not understanding a lot of.
They're not understanding by going, Mark, we got to go. I appreciate
right.
you being on, and thanks for your insights so much.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
We'd like to thank Mark Hancock once again for being on the show. Thank you, Mark, and you are making them in America out there every day. And we wanted to remind you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very, very little to do with a win or a loss. And if you're working with kids, stretch them. Stretch them. Speak to the king and the queen in those young men and young women. Do not allow the process of a dumb-down through participation trophies and those things that we're trying to get them to feel good, or they will throw them away like a ride at Coney Island that they got tired of doing. So, folks, hang in there and keep doing the work with the one person that's in front of you. Got to go. We'll see you next week, American Tennis, with Coach Chuck Creasy.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.